Well, why don't we go ahead and get started? Good afternoon, everyone. Thanks for coming to In the Hot Seat Community Source. We're excited about this new type of session in the hot seat. These bright lights shining on, we didn't know they meant literally in the hot seat. But because we're a small group today, that means that your responsibility is even greater, because these sessions are all about you asking questions and challenging our presenters today. So good afternoon. I'm Jennifer Foudy. I'm the executive director of the Kowali Foundation. And a couple housekeeping items. First of all, evaluations. Please fill those out online at educause.edu so that we get some feedback on these sessions. And secondly, this is being broadcast to the online audience as well. So when we get to the question and answer, it's really important that all of us be speaking into a microphone, even though with a small group we may think we can be heard. We need to make sure the online people can hear us as well. So there's a mic in the middle of the room, and I also can pass my mic as well. So without further ado, let me introduce our hot seat contestants today. Here on the very right is Matt Coombs. Matt currently acts as the Senior Director of Systems Development for San Joaquin Delta Community College. It was one of the first of the three schools to implement the Kowali financial system, and he also oversees the primary administrative systems and new technology advancement as well. He's consulted with institutions, there we go, that anticipate a need for enterprise integration, system deployment, and open source adoption. He also currently serves on the board. The board of Kowali Student, Kowali Rice, Kowali Ready. And he represents the Kowali Foundation as a board director at PESC, the Post-Secondary Electronic Standards Council. Prior to the Delta position that he has and the work with Kowali, he was a solutions architect for SunGard Higher Ed based in Philadelphia. And he played an active role in the development, introduction, and management of multiple SunGard products, including the largest market share portal in higher ed. Matt has been active in educational technology for over two decades and holds a master's in instructional technology from Utah State. So we're glad to have Matt here. Also next to Matt, we have Mike Winkler. Mike is the Director of Information Technologies and Digital Development at the University Libraries at University of Pennsylvania. He directs technology infrastructure, digital library efforts, and application development for this top research library at Penn. Additionally, he manages the university's primary learning management service that supports over 18,000 students and over 4,000 faculty. He's also chair of the Kowali OLE, which is the Open Library Environment Functional Council. This is the project to develop a next-generation library management system. He's been a core participant in this effort for well over 2 years now. Before coming to Penn way back in 1999, he was head of systems at North Carolina State University Libraries, so came up north from the deep south. So glad to have Mike here with us. And last, certainly but not least, is Lori Schultz. Lori is the Assistant Director for Sponsored Projects at University of Arizona. At the U of A, Lori leads the pre-awards section of Sponsored Projects, which includes review and approval of proposals and incoming grants and contracts. Lori is also the past chair, breathing a sigh of relief for the word past, of the Kowali COEAS Functional Council. Lori has worked in research administration for over 16 years, has led staff in pre-award and post-award fund accounting, conducting campus-wide training on a host of research and compliance topics, presenting research administration and ERA topics at NCURA, SRA, and FDP, which is the Federal Demonstration Project. Lori has a master's in accounting from the University of Arizona Eller College of Management. So we have three very diverse individuals who are very hands-on and have a passion and an interest in the community source in higher ed. So the way this session is organized is I'm going to give the three folks here an opportunity to say two or three sentences, or maybe two or three paragraphs, on what their interest and passion is about this topic, and maybe be a little bit provocative. And then their role after that is to be challenged by you with questions, ideas, issues, comments, to make sure you're actually putting them on the hot seat. So with that, Matt, why don't we start with you?
Great. Can you guys hear me? I'll just use my family's example of why I'm interested in community source. I've got five kids. My oldest daughter just left the house, a very traumatic experience for my wife. She's now in the country of Ecuador and involved in an enrichment educational experience that is typically referred to now as a GAP program. And she, every morning, she actually is involved in 2 hours of instruction that happens over a satellite connection back to Connecticut, where she learns her role in the world and how she can make a difference. And then she goes and actually works in the communities that she'll be involved with. And she's going to do that in six different countries over the next 8 months and then bring that information back to our U.S. legislature and the Gates Foundation and other groups. And so that process, the software they are using and the way that she's interacting with the world is a community source-based technology. My second daughter is in a hybrid program in which she's in a charter school, and in that charter school she's doing homeschooling over Skype and interacting in different modalities with different resources that the school makes available to her, and then she spends half her time at a community college so that when she graduates from high school, she'll actually already have earned her associate's degree. And then my oldest son, lacrosse player, has a very social networking aware coach who uses Twitter, Dig, and CUDA.com, which is basically it's a .com website, but it's essentially a combination of coaches that share their coaching experience through a website. So he has homework in actually watching techniques and then a chart in which he has to then practice what he learns. So in every one of these situations, well, I say my 12-year-old son, the only thing he uses the internet for is to find cheats for his video games. But it's proving to me, first of all, that I'm very old, because in many ways those technologies are ones that they pick up much quicker and better than I do. But it also proves to me that in higher education we have a challenge to keep up with these different types of learning, in which we're not an institution teaching lots of individuals. We're needing to be challenged to actually create a school of one. In other words, how can we meet that one individual? And if we have ERP systems and higher education technologies that are built on 10, 20, and 30-year code bases, it's not going to happen. It's only going to happen because a community gets together, determines what it is that we can do better, faster, stronger, and how can we help each other actually change the way that we learn. And as a result, I'm very passionately supportive of any community-based development of technology, especially those that actually help in learning and learning technologies.
Thanks, Matt. So I'm in the library at the University of Pennsylvania, and I'll talk a little bit about why the library is interested in community source software and by extension why the university is interested in it. And the first is really just the marketplace that libraries operate in. The vendor market space for this class of software is a contracting low innovation. They're playing out those 10 and 20 year code base investments that they made for library management software. So we're not seeing a whole lot of innovation. When we ask for requests, just as a way of description, our particular vendor, for example, solicits requests for changes to the software, enhancements to be made from the community. The community goes through a pretty extensive process of collecting those from librarians all around the country, around the world even, and condensing them into classes of enhancements that we want for the software, and then rating them, prioritizing them. Out of that, we get about 400 enhancement requests for the software, and the company will say, we'll take the top five. So not a lot coming out in terms of innovation for them, and they keep promising the next generation of software to come out. The other is the product load on my staff. So in order to meet all of the needs, since the code base hasn't changed in a long time, what the companies have done is rather than change the system that you originally bought, is they come out with an extension to the system. So primarily library systems are designed to handle print materials. But then electronic license e-journals, for example, became very important in libraries. And the online systems, they really couldn't handle this very well, so they had us buy another system. Video and media is becoming very important in libraries, and what we're hearing from our vendors is, well, you're not going to find systems that really deal with those. We're developing one, and of course it'll be an additional cost. The second reason, though, is a library is an enterprise application and resources. Just thinking about the library in a different way. Traditionally, libraries have had IT operations of some type. Large research libraries certainly have. And we've developed software or we've integrated software and those sort of things. But it's always been, well, that's just what the library is doing. It's really not an enterprise application. But over time, we're getting more and more embedded with what the enterprise is doing. We're using the identity management system, not just for authentication and authorization, but for segmenting the population and marketing services to them in direct ways. Additionally, you can imagine the library system is a resource to the librarians, but that's because of the way the software is designed. It's relatively complex and difficult to use. You have to be trained on it, those sort of things. But there's lots of needs on the campus to organize material, to organize scholarship in some way, and this is something that software is very good at doing, helping people collect metadata or construct metadata and then manage collections of material. So you could imagine library systems actually being a resource back to the community, not that's arbitrated necessarily through the library, but that is just out there on the network and can be used by anybody. How many people here think of their library as a technology leader? Okay. One person raised their hand. I saw that. Maybe more of you do, but one of the reasons that we're interested in community sources, it's a real opportunity to raise our profile on campus, to let the rest of the campus know that we are dealing with significant technologies, that we have development expertise, and we have other expertise that are useful to the development process, like expertise in metadata, and in data management and curation, those sort of things. Also, we have an opportunity through Community Source to be a leader within the library community as well, to stand out among our peers and to work with other institutions that are like-minded in leadership roles to try to further the agenda of academic and research libraries. But the real reason that I got into this, the thing that sort of motivates me, and I'll just give you a little factoid about my library, but I'll start out by saying libraries have always been community source. Our library at Penn circulates books. More than 50% of those materials are not owned by the Penn Library. We get them from other libraries through resource sharing networks and that sort of thing. And we've been doing this for decades and decades. So we've been used to this idea of community source for some time. It's in our DNA, so to speak, and when the opportunity came along to be involved in developing a community source solution for libraries, it just seemed like a natural. So we got involved in it because it's really who we are.
Thanks, Mike. And for me, you know, research administration, Mike just said that it's in libraries' DNA to collaborate and use community-type applications. I would say the exact same thing is true for research administration. I want to go back a little bit, and were most of you in this morning's session with Dr. Gershenfeld? I mean, that was incredible. It inspired me. It reminded me of why I do the things I do every single day. So it was a great way to kick it off, and it's kind of a nice segue into talking about a community source for research administration, because if you look at all the things that Dr. Gershenfeld is doing, it's extremely innovative, and we want those people on our campuses. We want those kinds of faculty members who have wonderful ideas that are changing the world, and we have to have the infrastructure to support them. And the reason community source works so well for research administration is that the community already existed before community source existed for research admin. I mean, many of the people I'm working with now, I'd worked with for years on other projects and in other conferences, other professional organizations, before something like Kuwali even came up. So we already knew each other. We already knew how to work together. Collaboration is part of what we do. And if you look back at, you know, what Dr. Gershenfeld was talking about this morning, collaborating with others, with funding agencies, with other faculty members, to get these ideas out there into the world to help people, that's what research administrators are for, not to just collaborate amongst themselves, but to collaborate to further the mission of faculty members who are like Dr. Gershenfeld. And, you know, where the University of Arizona is right now is in a place with bad infrastructure that doesn't support those researchers as well as it could. Dr. Gershenfeld comes from MIT. They have an integrated research administration system called COEUS, which is the baseline system for Kuali COEUS. So we know what we're getting, and we know how well it works for people like that faculty member this morning. And the University of Arizona, we have a very old system for pre-award and post-award. It's over 20 years old. It is unsupported hardware and software. It's in very bad shape. The rest of the research administration enterprise at the U of A, so talking about things like human subjects, animal subjects, biosafety, all the compliance items that might make up a single research project, those either have no system at all and they are, you know, using paper forms and entering the data into a spreadsheet, or no lie, a Paradox database from the 90s, or they have vended systems or something they built themselves for one very small piece of functionality that lives in its own space and doesn't talk to any other system on campus. So right now what we have amongst research administration is integration only exists if I pick up the phone and call someone and ask for a piece of information that they then email or fax to me. And that's how it's working, which means it really isn't working. And one of the things that was really important to our campus about getting a research administration system, period, was integrating all of those systems. It's also what the hurdle is. I mean, the community source part wasn't even the first hurdle. It's getting everybody together and on the same page about moving forward in a common direction that has been the hurdle. But I think for the U of A, it meets all of our strategic visions for the things we're trying to do for research admin. Plus, being a development partner and implementing quite soon with Kuali COEUS makes us our own best advocate in creating the system, getting our own experts trained in how to use the system, and, you know, moving forward into implementing the current release and ones going forward.
Thank you all for that introduction. Now it's your turn to put them on the hot seat. They've told you one perspective, and so now your job is to challenge them on any of the topics or any thoughts that you might have. And you can either direct your question or challenge or issue to a particular contestant up here or just to the general group, and we'll try to answer it. So there's a mic right back in the middle of the room, or I can pass you my mic. Who wants to break the ice? Come on. Great, right here.
I'm wondering, when you use the term community source, if you're trying to soften the word open source. I often wonder, you know, when I hear community source, it makes me think that we're talking about open source, but open source is scary because that means anybody can get in there and touch it. So we control the community, but it's, anyway, are you hedging by saying open, by saying community source, or is it something different?
I'll take it. So I actually see them as two completely different things, which is why when I refer to, I'm an employee at an institution that's heavily involved in the Kuali Student, Kuali Ready, Kuali Financial System, and Kuali Rice projects. And in every single one of those situations, it's a community building something. And it's not quite, either it's chosen as its mission to not open itself up to a full global community, or it's not ready for it yet. So just give Kuali Student as an example. We have multiple ways in the way people are involved in that project or product, and they can be an investing partner, which means they get sort of a board seat and a say in the direction of the product. And then there are those that are partners get to be informed and maybe have access to things. And then eventually, as we feel like we've got a product that's ready for the entire world, then we'll make it available for that. The difference between that community project and an open source project is, from the get-go, essentially you're saying, I want everyone and anyone to be part of this, and we'll manage that the reaction to that in an open source project. But I think the net is the same, which is that it's even though we have a community that's trying to determine the best way to build a system for higher education by higher education, we want to make something available that is economical and beneficial to the entire world.
Yeah, and what I think I would add to that is it really is like a gated community. You know, while you could, the software is free to download, you could take it back to your institution and do whatever it is you want to with it. You're not affecting my instance and my installation of the software. And even if you were not an investing partner in the community, there's still a way to get contributions vetted through the foundation so that the functionality and the coding is good. People are not just throwing things in there and it's not, you know, not being reviewed by somebody else. But it really is a gated community with investing partners who are the ones who have a say in what goes in the software. And, you know, like Matt said, you know, for higher ed, by higher ed, really introduces best practices in each of the functional areas.
And I'd just add that it also, to me, speaks a little bit about sustainability. Open source is out there, and some very good projects have been picked up in ways that you understand that they're going to be sustained in a variety of ways. But there's lots of roadkill as well. So in the community model, I mean, we're looking at ways that even if Penn at some point, if its commitment changes to the Kuali Ole development process, there is a community out there of librarians who would become invested in this software in different ways. And we can see that it's not just the eight original partners that will sustain this forever. I will say, though, that the benefit of being one of the founding partners is we really get to establish what that's going to look like. And a lot of what we try to do now is think about the library community in general and what's best for academic and research libraries. And that's very rewarding part of the community.
Yes.
I'd like to comment on my colleague's question. One other dimension I see to it is that, you know, those of us in the technical world who do open source, a lot of it is us doing the coding. A lot of open source is actually written, completely designed by developers. For me, the community aspect is that this community source they're talking about is all driven by functional people. That's a different dimension than the typical open source kind of an environment. None of the developers in these applications are doing it on their own. They're all being told what does Mike need in a library system. What do we need in a research system? That's a big difference, I think, between them, and that's what requires that sort of special community relationship.
And we have another question in the back.
I have heard more than one of you say that, you know, we have 20-year-old code bases from some of our vendors, which is true, and they have a hard time upgrading, and therefore we should go to a community-based system because we have newer code. 20 years later, you're going to be the old code. So how do you guarantee that code it's going to be constantly upgraded when now you have a code base and it's working very nicely, and upgrading to another code base is going to take you 5 years of stopping what you're doing and doing something else, much like the vendors we see today?
Well, let me react to that just by pointing to something that SunGuard's doing right now. I actually think vendors are very critical to our future and our space, so don't take any comments that I say today as being anti any large vendor or software company. I think that what SunGuard is doing is actually recognizing the ability of current technology to allow collaboration in a way that was not possible even 10 years ago or even 5 years ago. And allowing their code base to be opened up and allow their community, meaning people who own SunGuard products or Banner specifically, to actually be part of the enhancement of their own product. So they've actually embraced this whole community source mentality inside the relationship of their own customers. To answer the other question you're asking is, there is no guarantee that we won't be that 20-year-old code, but I believe that with a larger community that is constantly revamping the function and features of the product, we will be able to not only change out code over time, because we're not building a monolithic waterfall method software product. We're building distinct and explicit services at a business level and an entity level, so we can easily trade out those web services for something else that might come down the road. We can place on a different UI technology, whether it's Google Web Toolkit or Flex or whatever else may come down the road. So I think we're actually, at least in the projects that I'm involved in, we've thought about how do we adjust our technology over time as the world presents it to us. But we get to control that. We are the masters of our own destiny instead of relying on a vendor, which is, in my opinion, a much smaller community than the potential that the open source higher education or community source higher education technology projects that you can see are sprouting up everywhere in the last few years.
You know, and what I'd add for the research side is that COEUS, our baseline application, already has a history of these kinds of changes. They started out as a Power Builder application. Their premium app is Java Swing, and they then went into a light application that's web-based. And going into KC, and KC being functionally equivalent with COEUS, provides an upgrade for them with Qali Rice. So there's that process has been happening over time with COEUS, and it's something that's definitely in our plans as we move forward.
Good question so far. What else? This is your chance. Yes. Thank you.
So community source sounds great for all you big guys with all the resources. What about us little guys? You guys would be fine, you know, either way. But, you know, we feel, you know, we're not sure. Are we outside the gated community? What's the role? And if we get excited about it, you know, how do we become part of the community without, dragging the community down and, you know, while trying to get up to speed? I guess big versus little.
You know, I'd like to start there. No one drags the community down. I can say that as a statement. I mean, it's very important to get the kind of input we've gotten from all kinds of partners. And, you know, the University of Arizona might be a big research institution, and it is, but no one for 30 years at the University of Arizona ever treated research admin like an enterprise system. So while we might be a large research institution, no one was throwing any money at it. So I would say that we're in a very similar situation resource-wise, both with money and people, because no one treated it like it's the kind of enterprise-wide endeavor that it really truly is.
And I can just say that, I mean, nobody's ever accused even research libraries of being well endowed. So we are trying to stretch the few resources we have for this. The primary mission that universities understand of libraries is the acquisition of information for the use of the faculty and researchers and students. Building systems is not something that we're typically resourced to do at that enterprise level. So the only way we really can do this is putting our lots together with other libraries that have similar interests. The other thing I'll say is that within the community that is Qali Ole, we do have a range of libraries. They're not all R1 research libraries. There are many, but we have some smaller universities as well that are involved. So there is a role for participation, because it is driven, as Barry said, at that functional level. The technology is coming from the process, but the functions is really what's coming out of the community.
So let me just ask you a question. The institution that I work at is San Joaquin Delta Community College, or San Joaquin Delta College. We dropped the community in all of the California community colleges years ago. So I work at a community college. Anybody want to venture a guess how many resources I have in my IT shop? What's that?
20.
Cut that in half, and that's still more than I have. So I have 4 Java developers managing both legacy and new projects on campus. All 4 of those are involved in a community source project. So to call me large, that may be large to some community colleges, but it's not large in my mind. So it doesn't matter how big you are. I think that if you were to ask any of the community source projects that San Joaquin Delta is involved in, we may come from a small school, but we make a big splash in every of the projects that we're involved in. We're donating very significant code to every one of those. So we would welcome any and all size institutions to be part of this. And as a result of our influence, we get to actually open the minds and perspectives of the larger institutions that are involved in these projects.
Next question.
The question, the statement was made, I think, a couple of times by the panel about not seeing a lot of innovation coming out of the industry at this time, and I would agree with that. It seems like we're in a time where there's not a lot of great vertical innovation. How do you see that community base is not lateral growth, and how do you see it as being innovative, and how do you see it as producing a greater sense of intelligence as a result of the community building that code?
Well, I think I was the one who said that. We do have a somewhat static innovation cycle in libraries. So what we're trying to do is build a service layer architecture. We're trying to think a little bit about what are the points that have caused us problems in the past. So for libraries, new formats have been very difficult to incorporate into our existing systems. And the reason our vendor tells us is, oh, well, the data model is very oriented towards print materials, print books. So now you have this new format, and it really isn't going to be accommodated very well. So we're going to have to go off for a couple of years and think about a different system. So we all learned quite a bit from that, that change is going to happen, and you need to build it into the system. You need to build in ways to accommodate the kinds of changes that you can look out and see. So format changes are one that we absolutely expect. Another issue that we run into is the user interface. Technologies move very quickly there, and you want to keep your user interface up to date. You know, you don't want to be one of those systems that they say, wow, that looks so 90s. So we've decided in Quali Olay, for example, not to build a user interface because there are lots of projects out there in the library community that are building very good user interfaces that are using agile development technologies so that they can be very responding to the changes to the underneath, to the things that drive those systems. So they can look very modern, very fresh. They can change as the technologies change for delivery, for information delivery, or they can integrate into other systems like courseware or those sort of things in ways that we wouldn't be able to design that technology stack to do. So we're really just focusing on what we can do really well, which is the workflows of libraries, of identifying material, collecting material, and describing it and making it available to those tools that people interact with.
I would just add to that by saying that as far as innovation is concerned, I think the number one issue that I found making presentations about technology to institutions across the country and different parts of the world was that I saw one really big problem, which was integration. The number one problem we have within our IT shop is how do I integrate one system with another? We typically don't go out and buy a soup-to-nuts ERP solution. We find best of breed, and that solves some problems but creates others. And I think that's only going to continue to be our problem for the fact that if you talk with any of the large ERP vendors, regardless of who they are, they're not doing the large ERP deals that they used to in just last year or the previous 5 years. They're actually focusing in on enrollment management or on business intelligence or strategic retention or different aspects like that. So as a result of that being where we can afford as schools to purchase solutions, we're not buying them either because we can't afford the whole shoot and match, or we're not buying them because we have something that works and we're just trying to fit in stop gaps in certain areas or trying to find a strategic solution for something. We're going to be buying these point solutions, and if they're not built correctly, if they're not built to be an integrated part of the solution, if one's built in Corba, one's built in Java, one's built in .NET, one's built in whatever, then we're going to only have an increased problem of integration. So I think if nothing else, community source projects, which are typically built on modern technologies, are sort of pushing the whole industry into modernizing the way that they build software so that we actually can interact in a better world. So regardless of whether you have faith in or want to join in some of the higher education community source projects, I think that we need to, as a group, applaud and support community sources and effort, because I think in the end, it will make our lives better.
Yeah, and what I'd like to add to that is I think that what community source offers in the research world is quick reaction to things that are changing very rapidly. I mean, when the Stimulus Act was passed, we had only a couple of months to deal with the onslaught of proposals that came in, and then the grants and contracts that came in, and the quarterly reporting that was unlike anything we'd ever seen before on grants and contracts reporting. And to everything, you know, we know about now, that level of reporting detail is not going away. And our being able to react quickly with our systems for those regulatory and policy changes is really very important to support the mission of the institution and frankly, to just follow the rules.
Yes, a question here in front.
Thanks. I have a question about influence, and it's funny, this question got asked in my presence just 2 weeks ago on my campus, and Michael, you know the person who said it, and we'll talk later, but he wanted to know, well, he made the point to someone else that the one concern with community source is that deep-pocketed lunatics could drive the direction of a project, and so, you know, while it was a funny way of saying it, his concern, I think, was whether either money or personality can, in some projects, have undue influence on the direction of a project where other people might feel strong-armed into going along.
Well, what I can say about the experience that I've been having with the Kuala Ole is that there are some checks on that naturally in our governance and organization. So. Everyone is at the table and, you know, they have votes, but we've only had one vote and we did it just to test what voting was like. I think it was a vote to not have another vote for a while. But what we really are facing is trying to get at least these eight partners to agree that there are common problems and solution paths that we should follow. So there are some pretty heated debates about how we should organize the project and the technology that we're going to use. Those get resolved through the process, the functional council process, and the need to drive our developers to get specifications to them and code laid down. So we've had to make some decisions about things that aren't necessarily in the best interest of any one of us, and that has included me sometimes. I think the check on the deep pockets comes from that, is that everybody put in the same amount, at least in my project, and has the same skin in the game. And then there's a hierarchy there that sort of manages that.
Yeah, and the same is true of the governance structure for Kuala Koeus. And I would add to, you know, aside from each school has one vote and they're all contributing the same thing, so it does level the playing field, is on the functional council with the people who are voting for their institutions, not a single one of those schools is sending their wallflowers. So we don't have anyone who's backing off and being shy, which is a really good thing for us because we don't need that. We need people who are engaged and will challenge ideas so that we don't have one person who ramrods over everyone's ideas.
I guess I would differ. I would actually agree with that comment in one area, which is that better resource schools can actually deliver to a project more resources. So for instance, if I only have four job developers, I only have four people that are the mind share of the development part of the project. Someone who could bring eight job developers could potentially affect the technologies, the directions, the languages. You know, they're taking their influence and potentially leading a project down a certain direction. so I can see where the perspective could have some validity. But the good news is that at least the projects that my school's been involved in, it's been as been stated here, is that my functional council representative has just as much say as any large 4-year or larger school than mine. So that person has an equal seat at the table. The same thing, I have an equal say at a board level,
And frankly, I think my four Java developers are better than any other resources that are on the project, so they typically get what they want. So.
And you know, and another side of that with the developers is that, you know, if I tender a developer to one of these projects, I might still be managing that person from an HR and a coaching perspective, but I am not telling that person what to do. That person is managed by a development manager on the project. Very likely is not someone at my institution. So it also does kind of remove that layer of, well, I can just tell them whatever cool thing I want them to put in there and they'll do it because I'm their boss. You know?
I will say for Qualia LA, we're outsourcing development. So the functional council rules because the developers just do what we tell them to do.
Hello, I'm Simone, and my community is the European community, so this question is a little bit different. In the European community, I work for a consortium of universities in Italy. It happens so that in Europe, several university consortia are also the main providers of ERP system for universities. Recently, we've engaged in talks, in collaboration talks, with our counterparts in Europe to see how we could cooperate. You may be aware of the Bologna process, so there is an issue or an aim to create what it's called the European Higher Education Area, so to harmonize systems and so on. But it's tough because at one point we are competitors, we are vendors, and then you want to cross borders, but then you have, you know, you are the player there. And unfortunately, within this community, although there is an aim to harmonize and converge, the local system are different. So there are different interpretations of the same system. We've been looking at how we could collaborate in a different sense, so how this community can engage in the higher education world. And even looking at the quality experience, you know, the community sources, we are a community, so we would like to, maybe that's the way to go. We realize that it's possibly it's not looking at the applications, but at the frameworks. So one of the questions that we have and we would like to explore is, can we learn something from the community sourcing experience in the States, I mean Quali or any others, and how can we then initiate a process of moving away from the legacy systems and toward starting to work in a community sourcing way, if you will. So reviewing. So I guess the intention is there, and we feel that there is an opportunity to collaborate at the European level, yet it's a very fragmented space still through this community approach. So I guess the question is, do you have any advice as to how can a diverse community engage in projects, you know, maybe through frameworks or any other suggestion that you may have in this case?
Well, I think the first thing that I would say is building the community was where we started. We had a year-long process where we went out and talked to hundreds and hundreds of librarians about how they felt about their current systems and how they felt about the future of these kinds of systems and whether they saw that these were supporting the goals that they had and the requirements that were on them. And from that, we collected an awful lot of information and found that there was huge amount of support within the community for some community-based action. So we went back and we talked about, would it be reasonable as a community to begin building a framework for developing software that met library community needs? And again, we got a very positive answer from that experience. So we concentrated very much on being very inclusive and trying to let the community talk to us about their perspective on technical solutions and how they felt about the competition between institutions and whether it was being done at the library cataloging level or whether it was being done at the service level. So I just could emphasize that through that process we found an awful lot of synergy and commonalities. We uncovered an awful lot of articulations of problems that could be addressed through software, and that was a very valuable experience for us.
I think that what I'd add to what Mike said around building the community is that, you know, in higher ed, 10 schools do the same thing 11 different ways. So we're really familiar with that. You know, everybody does it different, but we have the same goals in mind. So that for us, what was really important was, you know, the goal setting, the high level, like we want to be able to meet these objectives. And, you know, like being able to submit grants.gov proposals online, for instance, or, you know, meeting certain federal requirements that we all have to meet. The other side of that is, you know, you can set goals and everybody can agree on what those goals are, but it's also the expectation setting and adjusting as you go along the way, because it can be really hard to know that you're trying to collaborate, you're trying to come with this common vision. Everybody has to sacrifice something along the way. And that's where the arguments happen, is you can agree on what your common goal is, but getting there is where the argument lies, and why my super awesome widget isn't the one that you picked. It can be really problematic, and I think sort of anticipating that and setting expectations gently around that is really important.
I say there's only three ways that, I think there's three paths. One is that you build a platform. I maybe an overused analogy, but like the App Store, right? If you built the App Store, people will build stuff for it because they can make money at it. In the community source in world, different drivers, but if you build a platform, whether that's middleware platform or you build an agreement as to what everyone's going to build to build into, once that platform exists, then everyone at least has rules in which, you know, an environment in which they can agree to. Even though they can take different paths, there's the platform. Second is standards. There's all sorts of national standards that are trying to be pushed through. PESC organization, others like it, are trying to come up with standards that are either K-12 or K-20. And if we can adhere to the standards, it really doesn't matter what platform we use as long as we agree to a set of standards. But getting that agreement is no small feat. And the third is the community, which has already been mentioned. So the only other thing I can think of is having someone with a whole bunch of money motivating people to move in a single direction. But if you know someone like that, let us know, because we want some of that. So.
One more question. Barry, did
you? I'd like to add just one more perspective. I've been involved in Sakai, JSIG, U Portal, and all but one of the Kuali projects. Based on that, my input is pick the partners carefully. The technology will be resolved. That's the easy part. It's the partners. And the critical thing is smart people who are willing to park their ego on the hanger outside the door. If they won't do that, it doesn't really matter how smart they are. So pick the partners carefully and it'll work out. Also, a lot of beer, a lot of wine.
That's what fuels Kuali Koeus, by the way. And Barry's right. I mean, we have lost people in our development partners. Some of the players have changed in those schools for that exact reason. Yes.
Right. Community source as survivor. Time for one more question. Speak now or... All right. Well, we're actually at our time. Oh, good. One more question.
Well, actually, the question is to elaborate on the last comment, basically, of picking your partners wisely. So what does it mean in the community?
Right, so talk a little bit more about picking the partners wisely.
Yeah.
And how do you do it, and what does that mean?
As I said, we had a process that happened before. We had this sort of fact-finding year-long project, and we had about 15 partners in that project, and only six of them continued on to the build phase for a variety of reasons. I think some actually had some questions about the feasibility of doing this. I think others didn't have the resources. And I think others were compelled by the institutions to invest whatever resources they had in different ways, but didn't come along. But we spent a significant part of that year looking at each other. Because you're putting a certain amount of confidence and faith in each other to think sometimes you want to think a little bit parochially, because you do need to meet the needs of your institution in order to be involved. That's why your institution is being involved. But in general, what we've already decided is that this is something that serves primarily the needs of the kinds of institutions that would get involved. So we wanted to make sure that we had a good amount of trust with each other, that we could communicate well, and we spent lots of time in bars sort of guaranteeing that, in fact.
Yeah, with Kuali Koyas, our four original partners were partners on KFS. And a lot of us had started out in the group that was around the contracts and grants functionality in Kuali Financials. So there was that small group that already knew each other once we decided that there needed to be a separate enterprise, you know, size system for research administration. And then beyond that, some of our partners were, frankly, because we reached out to the people we knew who were interested. And that helped a lot. There were a lot of people, and now it's a little less so because some of the people coming on board are not people we know really well. But it's people that we've talked with a lot, including the newer folks, so that we do get a feel for who they are. They've come to our meetings before they've joined so that they get a feel for who we are, because, you know, it's not just letting people into our community. It's them deciding they actually want to be there in the first place. That's another part of it, too.
Great. Well, our time has come to an end, although I'm sure the folks will stay around if you have any further talk that you want or questions you want to ask them directly. But thank you very much. Be sure and fill out the evaluation, and we'll see you tonight at the social. Thank you.
Thank you.